As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You'll be the best and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Jordan, in this year that has been so upside down, left is right, north is south, we should have known that what it would take to pull the Rams out of this nightmare season is the blue jerseys, which had been considered just the curse of all time. And then they put them on Christmas Day against the Denver Broncos. And lo and behold, it's a blowout victory. Jordan, what was that like to sit there? I mean, the likes of which we haven't seen since 2021.
2018, actually. 51 wow, points yeah. My goodness. Where they dropped a 50 burger, or as I like to say, a 50 Krabby Patty for the first time since 2018. Wow. That was just remarkable. That was a lot of fun to cover because once the floodgates opened, they just went. Like, you could see it, you know, Russell Wilson getting intercepted on back-to-back throws, his second and third throws of the game, Kobe Durant picking him off, and then Bobby Wagner jumped, like, just totally squeezing and sitting on that route. I mean, it was just textbook. Do not throw the ball there. And Bobby Wagner was like, guess what? I'm here. And so, you know, you kind of knew that, but then they were scoring. The Rams were scoring points on the other side. And I didn't even know what I was watching for a minute. I was like, oh, kind of shake off the rusty, dusty part of my brain that's used to watching this happen. Because the Rams, Rich, this is the crazy stat. And I said this to a couple people up in that press box who are affiliated with the team, and they almost couldn't believe it either. But it's true. The Rams entered this game only having previously this season scored one touchdown off of defensive takeaways. And the Rams defense, while those takeaways, there was a drought in the middle of the year, they still ranked about upper third of the league in defensive takeaways or stops, certainly in stops, but specifically in takeaways. And after defensive takeaways, the Rams had only scored one touchdown all season. And they ended up scoring two touchdowns and several field goals off of these takeaways and 23 points off of turnovers total, which eclipsed their total points of 16 heading into the game off of takeaways. I mean, that's a tremendous stat in my mind.
Yeah. Complimentary football.
Shout out to everybody who spells it correctly with an E and not an I. Mm-hmm. I compliment you.
Yes.
If you can spell complimentary correctly.
Yes. I've seen that someplace and I don't know whether I should say it on this podcast, but I see it every time and I go, yeah, somebody really needs to look at that. Yes, complimentary with an E. Although you can say complimentary. Wow. The Rams really did well. I'm going to give them a compliment. Maybe that's what they mean. Complimentary football. Anyway, we're getting into word and nerd territory here. But just amazing stuff. And then look, I'm going to circle back to what we talked about last week. it's one win. You know, no, nobody's sitting here declaring the Rams are back. Everything is fine now. 2023 is going to be 17-0. Like that's not what it's about. But I think when you're at this point of the season, you take what you can get. You build on what you can put on the field. And I think this was a step forward in a lot of ways. And I know we're going to get into some of those ways. But before we do, you just have to say, I mean, the Denver Broncos. Oh my goodness. I mean, Rams fans, if you think you're in a difficult spot right now, take some solace from the fact that you are not the Denver Broncos.
It can always get worse.
Oh, I'm not sure it can get much worse than Denver's at right now. I mean,
it could have been Jacksonville last year.
Yeah, that would probably be worse. Yeah, that's
it can get worse. There's always another bottom, guys. There's always lower.
That's but the message I get, we want to. Yeah, we'll take that into
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Take that into 2023.
I do see it can your always point, though. I do get continue your point, Rich, because it is a good point.
No, but how about this? And there is a little bit of a Rams tie in here because, I mean, for those who maybe weren't paying attention to the last couple of days, I mean, after that disaster, the Broncos did fire head coach Nathaniel Hackett. And so now they're starting over there again. And, you know, who knows what's going to go on with their quarterback situation, which is really bad. I'm not a Russell Wilson hater by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't know what happened there. I mean, the guy... you talk about that throw to Bobby Wagner. I mean, some of the throws he makes, I just go like, what happened here? I don't understand it. But something that was very interesting to me, Jordan, and I know you have some insight on this or some thoughts is it got reported. And I apologize. I can't remember who first reported it, but it was reported that as the Broncos were looking for an interim coach or looking to name one that they considered or offered, depending on how you want to look at it, Coach Avero, who obviously was with the Rams for a number of years. And he, according to the reports, I don't have firsthand information on this, but according to the reports, he turned down the opportunity to be their interim head coach, which I think is actually a pretty smart move when you're looking at your long-term future, which is what you should be doing as a young coach looking to build yourself. But what did you think about that, Jordan? And you know, we didn't really get to talk about him but leading up to the game. He's done an extraordinary job there with that defense. You talk about all the things that Denver had been going wrong there. Up until this week, the defense had been a real kind of strength for them. So what do you think's going on there with him? And what do you think maybe the future holds for him?
Yeah, really, really hard to have a top 10 defense with an offense that is last in the league in almost every metric and sort of quantification. And still, Ajiro Evero was able to coach a top 10 defense and a top 5 in some metrics in certain situations. And certainly, red zone and goal line, they were first. And the Rams were second. And so it was really interesting. First of all, I think you look at this game as a definite outlier about Ajiro Evero's resume and sort of what the Rams were able to do because the floodgates opened and they were just they didn't punt one time. They scored points on eight of their nine drives. The ninth drive is a kneel down, so we don't really count that. But yeah, you know what? Actually, Rich, I definitely can confirm that firsthand that Ajiro Evero turned down that job, the interim head coach job. And later that day, also, George Payton mentioned that was the case as well, and that Ajiro would interview for the head coach job. And I think that's wise. You definitely want to interview someone if you have one good thing about like the dumpster fire that happened over there. And I would say a couple of those defensive coaches, Marcus Dixon is over there. Christian, who is it? Brandon Parker, or no, Christian Parker. The DB's coach, who was getting a lot of hype over there in certain hiring circles. He was the last holdover from the Fangio system, and Ajiro kept him around. There's a lot of talented coaches who are going to be other places are going to be looking at, including the Rams are going to be looking at a lot of these coaches, maybe even wanting to bring back some of their former staffers as well. And I think that's going to be interesting. I think it's really smart that Ajiro did not take that interim job. That's a setup for total failure. You don't want to put yourself in a position like I kind of compared it when I was talking to some league people about this yesterday. It was like if the conductor for the orchestra aboard the Titanic could have chosen a different career path in hindsight, do you think he would have? Yes, because you don't want to take the job that automatically means you sink with the ship. Like, it just, that's just, it's just smart planning, because Jiro will be a head coaching candidate, and certainly will be, if he doesn't stick around with this staff, he will be one of the top coordinator candidates on this cycle, and certainly will get some head coaching jobs as well. And so I think it was really, really smart for him to not be associated with someone else's mess, essentially. And also, I think it was a pride thing too, because Nathaniel Hackett is his best friend since they were in college. And so I think there was a bit of sort of a stand for something here at the end, because it is interesting that they made the hire. I don't think Nathaniel Hackett did a great job coaching this year. I think that a lot of circumstances were also outside of his control, including the quarterback situation, that I don't think anyone expected such a decline when Russell Wilson joined this team. And George Payton was talking about it publicly to reporters earlier this morning in a press conference, where he's like, Russell knows he has to play better, and we know that he has to and can play better. And so I think that that's something where that's very circumstantially out of someone's control, but some of the decisions also, you kind of felt like he was out of his element. It's really hard to be a head coach. Some people are really great at being coordinators, and it's hard to be a head coach, and you see whether or not they can hit that learning curve. On the converse, Brandon Staley, I just did a thing on Around the NFL for the Chargers clinching the playoff berth last night, and we're recording this on Tuesday morning, and you saw that Miami game was sort of, I think, where he finally hit that learning curve. And now you're starting to see him get in his bag a little bit as a coach and as a defensive guy as well. And so I think you can see those moments. And what I think the problem was they didn't see those moments. And then there was so much dysfunction on the sideline. And then after the game, Odey Abushi is appealing a suspension from the league. Randy Gregory is also appealing a suspension from the league because after the game, Randy Gregory hit Odey and Odey defended himself. And it was pretty clear. I found a video I put on Twitter. It was pretty clear that Odey was like walking away from the situation, and Randy Gregory kept sort of engaging. Yeah. And so I think that, and clearly that's something that should be appealed and is being appealed. So we'll have more information on that later this week. But that was a part of it too, was that sort of loss of total control of the team and sort of like this bewilderment of like, what do you even do? How do you even hold this thing together? And it also happened as the Rams are putting up 51 points, which doesn't help.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw them arguing on the sidelines. It looked like they were the offensive linemen and the Rippin were getting into it. So yeah, not a great situation, but not unexpected when they're in. And really, by contrast, I mean, I think we mentioned it last week or a couple weeks ago. I mean, the fact that didn't happen with the Rams, I mean, it's pretty easy to fall into that when your season starts spiraling and you're not meeting expectations and everybody's frustrated and angry and worried about their job. It's pretty easy to fall into that. Maybe not fights on the sideline, but that type of dysfunction can pretty easily seep into your locker room or your sideline. And that's why I said a couple of weeks ago, I think I give, the Rams and Sean McVay and the leadership a lot of credit there, that they were able to hang in there and really are now turning in some decent performances, even though, obviously the playoffs are out of reach. But really interesting stuff there about Ajiro and kind of his future. And it's not unlike what we talked about a couple of years ago with Brandon Staley, as you mentioned. I can understand in some circles the temptation, and I bet I would feel the same temptation if I were a coach in that situation, to say, oh, I got to get that job. It's a job. It's something that I can grab right now. But it's not always what's best for you in the long term. So yeah, would it be good in a way to get that head coaching experience? Yeah, maybe. But it's you don't want to hurt yourself in the long term. And this is a guy who is going to have a long term future, who is going to have opportunities and jobs. And it's just about putting himself in that right place right now. And I don't think taking charge of this team is the right spot, the right place. So we're in that season now of coaching.
Time of year.
It is that time of year. So, we'll see what happens. Obviously, you would expect some moves with the Rams, too. We don't know what will happen with Raheem Morris necessarily. There's obviously the stuff that's been out there about Liam Coem going back to Kentucky. We know that already. So we know every year, Jordan, there's going to be some movement. Who knows what's going to happen with Thomas Brown? That's going to be an interesting thing just to see what happens there in coordination with some of this stuff. So yeah, the cycle begins. I know it's always fun for you beat writers to deal with.
Yeah, it's interesting. I woke up this morning and I was like, holy shit, there's only 2 weeks of the Rams season left.
I know.
And it was a weird feeling because I feel like I've just been in go mode since January 2021 when the Rams traded for Matthew Stafford. And it's crazy to think how much has happened in such a short amount of time as we sort of enter the new year here. And yeah. I think what I think is going to be interesting is I can already tell there's been sort of an emotional shift in Sean McVay in terms of, I think that he's super energized by the way his team is fighting and the way that they've stuck together. And I would actually, you know, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, and I obviously credit a culture that starts with the head coach and then is carried through by assistants and different personnel, support personnel, you know, from Jacques McClendon and pro personnel to the pro personnel guys who are finding some of these new players, to the even the, you know, the equipment guys and the people on staff and the player support people who are there with these guys every single day. But I gotta give so much credit to the people, the players in this locker room, because you yeah. don't see, you've seen some bad Rams losses. You've seen a terrible Rams season. What you don't see is that type of shit on the sidelines. Right. And what you don't see is, I mean, you saw it with who did they sign now? Tack McKinley.
Yeah.
I was just like, man, that feels like years ago. You saw it with Tack McKinley and Justin Hollins. I'm not saying it's the reason neither are here, but neither are there, right. them are here anymore. That's not the reason, but it's right. like, you don't see those types of things stick. You don't see that recur. And these guys have really, it's been really remarkable. The vibes are great inside that locker room. Yeah. And it's because these guys have stuck together, and there's a lot of credit that needs to be due to the players themselves for continuing to look at this as what Bobby Wagner said several weeks ago. Basically, you have the tools in your hand and you can either build something good from this time or you can build something bad. Either way, you're going to build something. It depends on sort of the habits you form and then the choices you make. And, you know, I give so much credit to those guys specifically because, you know, on the offensive line, there's at some point there will be this year more unearthed about what it really was that Rob Havenstein did for that group this year. Yeah. And the way that some of those guys, even newcomers, O'Day, Matt Skora, what Coleman Shelton did for that group on a player level, how those guys as players specifically stuck together with each other. And I think that these types of things are paying dividends late in the season. I get that it can be frustrating for some fans because it's like too little too late. Right. But I think there's something here where if you're not ending the season with this sourness, this like dysfunction and sort of this gloom of swirling the drain because nothing's going right. You don't have any answers to anything. This is a team that's still working on answers and finding solutions to things that's capable of putting up 51 points against a really good defense without nine starters. And with guys who actually would be playing in the third quarter of a preseason game for this team. And I think that is something to really have like stick in people's craw, right? Like in a good way, because I think that's just the kids are all right is what I tweeted the other day, because I think that this is going to be okay. And I also think it's really important, Rich, because there's an energy from Sean that's very different from what it felt like in October and November of this year. There's an energy of accepting essentially what he can't change and understanding that the way forward has got to be solution oriented. And I think there's an energy and invigoration that comes from that. That and the fact that he's going to get a full off season to do the things he wants to do with his staff, which he didn't do last year, and do the things that he wants to do in terms of the preparation that he didn't do last year either. I think those are some factors that are really, really invigorating to him. You know, I can't sit there and directly quote him on that, but I'm around this dude every single day. And I just know. And I think that's really interesting between him, you know, that and Matthew Stafford's you know, public commitment and sort of killing of that gossipy nonsense about retirement or whatever. Like, between those two things together, I think that this team has still got tricks up its sleeve in terms of maximizing where it thinks it could be at in 2023.
Yeah, great point, Jordan. And you see it, you know, you said you can't quote Sean firsthand, but you see it, you know, every day. And I'm a step removed from it because I'm not there. But I can tell you that I saw, even from watching the videos of his interviews and things like that, there was a point there in, I'm going to say November, where, you know, I started to watch him and I go, man, I haven't seen this before. Like, he just, I don't want to use the word defeated because that sounds a little bit much. But the energy, the body language that was coming off of him was not something that I had seen before. And I had seen him after losses, after tough times. I mean, you know, 2019 season, not easy. But I saw something there that I hadn't seen before. And it made me think, I go, wow, this is tough for him. This is really tough. And you've seen that rebound. You've seen that energy come back. And I think that's really important for a team because it feeds off of that. But Jordan, I couldn't agree with you more about the players too, and bringing that energy, because it's so easy to fall into that. It's so easy to fall into negativity, into blame, into anger, into ambivalence, whatever it may be. Like, when you show up every day and, you know, we're not playing for the playoffs, we're not going to the Super Bowl, you know, the defense could easily look at the offense and say, you guys aren't pulling your weight. The offense can sometimes look at the defense and say, you're not making those stops. But it never creeped in. It never creeped into to anything that was at least visible. We don't know what happens behind the scenes, but yeah, you never heard about it.
Yeah. And well, you did a little bit at the beginning of the year. You know, you did hear publicly about, you know, Jalen Ramsey's comments, yeah, wanting to motivate the offense. And yeah, in his podcast, he talked about these types of things. And it was definitely frustrating. You heard, you know, Jalen Ramsey's comments after a game, after the Tampa Bay game. Those were, I think, low points for this team in terms, yeah, of the frustration, but it didn't break them. That's the point you're trying to make. And I agree, yeah, with it, is, yeah, it didn't break them, and they didn't let that fester. They didn't sit, yeah, in that space and dwell, and they didn't sort of mope and wallow. And I think that those are all signs of a team that knows it has better days in it and better days ahead. And you're seeing it. I mean, they've won two of their last three. And I think that, you know, there's a real opportunity here for them to go out swinging through the end of this season. I know that this game is really important on Sunday to a lot of people in the building. And, you know, the players, of course, every game is important to them. But it's going to be really, I think it's going to be fun days for the last couple weeks, even in sort of like a lost season. And right, really, I almost hate using that word, lost season, because it's very clear that these guys are still playing so hard and they're still working so hard to try to put some really good stuff together. And you're seeing players who should have a role on this roster and in this game plan. You're seeing players who should carve out a spot for themselves even in a rotation. You're seeing them sort of emerge. I think that Michael Hoyt has earned some rotational defensive end snaps. That's not to say that they shouldn't go out and get a pass rusher. I will pound on the table for this, just like I did last offseason almost every single day. And the Rams went out and tried and tried and tried and couldn't get it done. They will go out and try again, and they need to get this done, and they need to figure this out, whether it's draft or trade or whatever. But I think Michael Hoyt has earned a spot in that rotation. Jonah Williams, I think Greg Gaines, they're playing their butts off. Laurel Murchison off the top rope after, right, 13 days on the team, 2.5 sacks in wearing number 52, which I think that just freaking confused some of the offensive linemen. They're like, wait, this guy's out of position. We don't need to worry about him. He should be on the end. And he's in the middle just wrecking stuff. Yeah. And 2.5 sacks, just played a heck of a game, 3 tackles for loss. Like, what a great game he played. He will be fine. He had a stinger and he'll be back this week. I thought he showed some intriguing stuff. NC State, you got to love the guys out of, you know, the football players, some really, really great football players out of NC State over the last couple of years. And, you know, you're looking at on the other side, you know, you always have gotten this steadiness from Van Jefferson. But previous to his injury, Ben Skowronek kind of emerged as somebody who had taken that next step forward. Cam Akers, Rich, what a December Cam Akers is having. And you see it every day. I mean, I see, and I note this frequently, although I try to refrain from like hitting the point too hard, because I do know that, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm going out of my way to just recognize all of the good stuff that he's doing. He's doing a lot of good stuff in practice every day. He's showing up and working really, really hard. There's an electricity there. There's an energy there. He's on the details. Cam Akers has scored 6 touchdowns in, 4 December games, and became the Rams' first 100-yard rusher since well before last year. I don't even know if they had a single 100 yards rusher, but they definitely have one now. And Cam, yeah, who rushed for 118 yards and had added a bunch of receiving yards, 29 receiving yards to that number, and 3 touchdowns on Sunday. And you're looking at that, and that's great, but you're also looking at some of the pass pro work he's been doing. There's a blitz pickup in the red zone that was just outstanding, and it helped move the ball. It helped lead to a positive play. And I think that these are all things that this is detail work. This is a product of coaching, meeting the player where he's at instead of fitting certain people in certain boxes. Just like, what does a player need? How do they need to be coached? What is best for everybody in this situation? Let's have a two-way communication instead of just dictating sort of, you know, from the top level, what the expectation is. You know, Sean McVay's talked about it this week and talked about it at the time, actually sitting down way too far in this escalation that happened a couple months ago, way too deep into it, finally sitting down with the guy and talking to him, having a two-way communication and understanding you can't just assign a generalization to every player and say, hey, meet that standard. You got to coach players where they're at. And Cam Akers is, I think, such a special talent with so much potential. This is the player he always knew he could be. It's just sometimes, and I say this all the time in our world, like as a writer, or, you know, when you're looking for editing and stuff like that, is, you know, you can go kick a door down. You just need to know which direction to run in at first. Like, what are the steps ahead of that? How do you put those steps together ahead of that, you know, impact that you can make? And I think that's where some of the coaching decisions and some of the more open and honest communication takes place. And that's something that I think has been a huge factor. I don't think it's a secret that when Thomas Brown takes back over, or shifts into more of an expanded role with the running backs, because Rashad Samples went to Arizona State and took the receivers coach and passing game coordinator job, which is I think a great fit for him in terms of what his background is in, and I think I'm going to sound like an ASU fan, so I'm not going to get carried away, but the recruiting class looks great. Like, everything seems good anyway. But I think you can't ignore it when Thomas Brown goes back and takes over an expanded role in that regard, minus, you know, a position coach. I think that's a significant changeover. That's a significant difference. And Sean McVay came out this week and gave him credit for that as well. So carry that forward. How do you carry that progress forward? It's not just about putting your A-plus players in A-plus positions. It's also about putting your A-plus coaches in A-plus positions for those players. It's not about giving someone a title. It's about actually giving them roles within that title. And I think that's a lesson that I hope for Sean McVay that he's learned this year, the Rams as a whole, they have to have learned it in order to move this thing forward, because there will be new hires. He will be making some changes on this staff. And that is a lesson that has to carry forward into 2023 and beyond. And something that I think also has led to a positive change, not just in environment, but also in just general production and performance late down the stretch.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. you can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and you've hit there on the part that really fascinates me, Jordan, and is the carrying it forward part, because, you know, we can talk about what's been going on here, and I'm talking about Cam Akers in particular here, over the second half of the season. In the end, I mean, it doesn't mean a whole lot, right? I mean, we're going to get to the end of the 2022 season in a couple weeks, and we're going to look back and say, oh, wow, Cam Akers, good story. He turned it around. He was on the verge of being off the team. He was, you know, pretty much
trying to trade him.
They were trying to trade him, and oh, he came back and it was a great story and he performed well and everybody did well. None of that is really going to mean anything unless they carry it over to 2023. And that's really the question here is, did they solve the issue? And I don't expect you, Jordan, to have the answer, but to me, that is the biggest question. And I know it came up the other day with Sean McVay when he was asked about, I don't know what the question was specifically, but about, would you guys consider trading him or listening to trade offers or whatever it may be? And Sean's answer was something along the lines of, well, we'd be stupid to do that, you know, with what we've been seeing, you know, over the last few weeks here. I'm paraphrasing all of that, mind you, but and that's understandable. But to me, the question, and I know it's an obvious question, but the question is, did they fix the problem? Because obviously you can't go into 2023 wondering, you can't go into 2023 having these same issues start to pop up again, and you have to address them. So that's going to be the really fascinating thing to me, Jordan, because I think it's really important. They have to answer that question. And I know there's going to be other changes in that running backs room. You talked about the changes that could be coming to the coaching staff, whether it's guys leaving, coming in, changing roles, promotions, whatever it may be, it's not going to be the same look. But to me, that's the real fascinating part about this Cam Akers situation is, can they carry it over? Can they take what he's been building on over this last month or so and bring it into the 2023 season? Because if they can, they've answered a really, really significant question. And that's one box that you can check off among several that they're going to have to address between now and next September. But if they can do that, then that's to me, Jordan, that's where you look at this, you know, mess of a 2022 season and you find hope and you look at it and you say, okay, these last few games here, maybe they didn't mean anything in the standings. Maybe they didn't get you to the playoffs, but you're answering questions, you're solving problems, you're carrying momentum over. And I think that's why we're talking with some, optimism here, I guess you would say. It's not that neither one of us, Jordan, are sitting here saying like, oh, the Rams are back, everything's perfect, everything's great. It's you're looking for those signs, you're looking for those indications of, okay, how can they start building this back up? How can they start turning things back in the right direction? And I think we are seeing some things here, and you just have laid out several of them in the last half hour here. We're seeing some things here that give you hope if you're a Rams fan that yes, they can start building this back up and get that thing back to the level that we've been accustomed to seeing.
A few weeks ago, It was a really windy day in Thousand Oaks, as tends to happen. And a tree, a giant adult tree, uprooted because of the wind and fell on a Rams staffer's car. Everyone was okay. Nobody got hurt. But everyone's surrounding the area and looking at how this could have happened, other than, of course, these major gusts of wind that are occurring. But it's a full adult tree. You just don't see things like that, right?
Right.
So everyone's over there inspecting the tree. And the recurring sort of comment was, wow, that just lifted clean out of there. It's almost like there was no deep rooted foundation for this tree. It was a clean break right out of the ground. You couldn't even really see a root ball or any sort of matured roots underneath the ground that would tether it in place. And what I mean to say by that is you can give people all of the fancy titles and all of the fake promotions and all of the little names by assignment and change that around as much as you want. But if you are not following through with duties as assigned and expanded roles, you are the tree that lifts out of the ground and complete disaster happens with no roots to stabilize a foundation lower than what you can see on the surface. And the Cam Akers situation and that tree falling on the car is the exact same thing.
Wow. You need to write that. But you're right. I mean, I don't want to get into, you know, specific, but you can talk about titles, you can talk about even money or whatever, but like, that's not the answer. And like you said, hopefully that's a lesson learned and something that can be applied, because these situations are going to come up again. And there are going to be more opportunities and more choices and more jobs and more coaches and all of these things and more opportunities to get them right. So I'm fascinated by that whole story and by that whole process. And obviously it's something that as you look to the offseason, they're going to have to make sure that they get it right this time. And they're going to have to make sure that there's some stability there and some long-term, answers. So something to build on over the last half of the season for sure. But it has to, as you said, Jordan, it has to build forward going into 2023. So just a couple of weeks here left here, Jordan, you said something that that I was thinking about, and this is going to be a little bit of a tangent here, but you talked about the Chargers and the motivation for wanting to. It struck me, Jordan, especially now as we get into a 17 game schedule in the NFL, the Rams and Chargers should be playing each other every year. And I look around the league, and I know not everybody has a natural rival, quote unquote, or sometimes that natural rival is in your own division. Obviously, the Rams and 49ers, obviously the Rams and the Seahawks. I mean, these are teams that play each other twice a year, but they really need to have that. And I think for the sake of the NFL, it's a good thing. It's a good and maybe even earlier in the season. I mean, this game, the Chargers have already clinched a playoff spot. The Rams are out of it. It doesn't hold a whole lot of meaning. If these were both playoff teams, if they were both, had winning records right now, it would have a whole different feel. I don't know how you feel about that, Jordan, but I just know, and it came up in the context, as you know, I work in the NHL editing side, and they are actually talking about adding more regional games to where those teams play each other a lot. Like locally, the Kings and the Anaheim Ducks play each other a handful of times a year. They're actually talking about expanding that so that they play more times. I don't know. Is that important, Jordan? I mean, is that to have a Rams Chargers game every year? I know they're going to play in the preseason, but preseason doesn't matter.
Well, it just the Rams are basically fielding that team.
Yeah, but preseason part two. But I mean, you're around it. And you're around the fans, and you get a lot of feedback. I mean, do you think that matters? Do you think it would be good to have a battle for LA every fall?
Yeah, you know what? I think it's kind of a half-formed idea in my head, because I hadn't really thought about it much until recent events, not just in the NFL, but in college football too. I think that the NFL, with the two LA teams, there's an opportunity there, especially in light of some of the movement of Pac-12 teams to the Big Ten upcoming in the future, because I think you now have an opportunity to capitalize off of all of the marketing and all of the excitement that surrounds a crosstown rivalry, right? Like, you're not going to really feel that in USC, UCLA. I think that was so cool earlier this year, by the way. What was it? Those two teams that sold out the Rose Bowl. Like, I just thought that was so cool. And then watching some of the ways that high school sports, they really do it up big in terms of some of those big time games and big time events. And I think that's really missing on an NFL level here. So I think there's a huge opportunity, especially with UCLA. Like, it'll still be a high stakes game when those two play each other, if that, you know, at some point they do, but when they move officially, there's an opportunity to sweep into that space and really amplify the crosstown. And I know, you know, it's kind of awkward because it's like, they're the tenants of the Rams. So you're like, you're not trying to be jerks to your tenants or anything like that. Or you're not trying to like have a rivalry to your, you know what I mean? Like, there's a little bit of an awkwardness there, but they practice their day-to-day facilities are so far away that from each other, that it does kind of make sense in my mind that, you know, the Rams are always going to be the ones that own the rights to the stadium. It's the Rams. It's always going to be that sort of vibe. And I think that that automatically introduces the potential for some really cool chippiness and some really cool, interesting themes. And I think it would behoove both teams to amplify that type of thing. Even if they don't feel it personally, I think that it would really behoove both teams' presence in the state, in the city, to make those types of marketing efforts and make those types of amplifications, because people love that stuff. I mean, people really, really love that stuff. And, and I think you never really saw any, you never like Lakers Clippers, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rich, cause I didn't live in the area for a long time, but it never really amounted to anything, right? It was always like, it's the Lakers and the Clippers, you know, like it never really, even when the big time players go to the Clippers and all this stuff, you never really feel like it's, you know, that like a really bitter and battled, like there's always kind of like, okay, sweetie, yeah, it's fine. You know? And so I think there's an opportunity here for both teams with growing fan bases in the area to really install some passion and some real angst over this thing. I don't know if it'll happen, but to me, it just sounds fun. I may be speaking selfishly too, because I would like to cover games like that. You know, I would like to feel out the vibes, man. You know, I'd like to know what that kind of feels like.
Yeah. And it great observation. And I'm glad you brought the USC UCLA thing into it too, because I think that's really appropriate and really a good parallel, because those two schools, they don't like each other. Like they want to beat each other, and that the two fan bases don't like each other. I mean, there's no brotherly love when it comes to that, except that they've done a good job of leaning into that and, you know, playing up the importance of the rivalry. It's been now probably 15 years, maybe more, maybe 20 years that they started wearing the home jerseys together. Like they got together, you know, they used to do it the traditional way. One team wears their whites, one team wears their color. And then they said, you know what, we're going to go back to the way it was. And I think in the 60s and every time we play, USC is going to wear their cardinal and gold, and UCLA is going to wear their blue and gold. And they agreed on that. And it's now one of the most amazing parts of the rivalry is they get together under the, you know, clear blue sky of the Rose Bowl, and they're both wearing their colors, and it's something that they did together because they realized the importance of the rivalry and they build it up. And I think they also realized that it's kind of a rising tide that lifts both of them when both teams are doing well, when they build that excitement, when they fill the Rose Bowl, like you said, it helps both teams. It helps their exposure. And I think it's a little bit difficult when you're the Rams and the Chargers, because you're not playing each other every year. I mean, I haven't looked at the schedules, but I don't know after this, the next time that lines up. So it's hard to say like, oh, we're going to build that right. It's different with the Rams and 49ers because they play twice a year and then they're in the same state. So you have some of that.
And I would not say that has lifted both teams of late, by the way.
No, not exactly. Yeah. Not exactly. but it's at least that rivalry feel that's really hard to build in LA because you just don't have that. And you're right. The Lakers and Clippers, like it's just, they don't want nothing to do with each other. Like the Lakers, it just the Clippers, like you said, are just a minor annoyance. The Clippers go out of their way to cover up the Lakers banners in the former Staples Center. There's no sense of like, we want to build this together and build it up to something, because the Lakers feel like they don't need the Clippers. And they might be right about that. But in this case, I think when we're talking about the NFL teams, I think it would elevate them, especially being in the same building. They could really hype this up. They could really build it and you know, make it into something that is beneficial to both teams. But I think it has to start with, like, it has to happen more often. You can't just have it be a once every 3 years or 4 years or whatever it is in the regular season, because you can't sustain that. I mean, they're like these two planets that are just kind of orbiting around the same sun, but they never really come into contact with each other.
And using really, really polite voices in public.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, it'll be really interesting. I didn't mean to get off on a huge
No, I think it's a great question. I think it's an interesting one, because this game, hypothetically, you know, if the Rams, all things equal, if the Rams are where they should be and where we know that they will be again, like, this should be a really, really good matchup. This should consistently be a really, really good game. It was billed. It was put at the end of the season because the league believed that this would be one of the best games of the season. You know, the Rams imploded and the Chargers are now sort of finding their footing late in the year. But it should be a complete, really cool game. And, you know, I think it still will be a really great game, but it doesn't have the stakes attached to it. So there's really no either. There's not even really a crosstown in my mind. I mean, I know that there's really passionate people in both fan bases, and they probably maybe feel differently. But in terms of the general branding and the overall big picture marketing of it, like, there's no crosstown stakes either. So I do think that this is there's an opportunity here, especially with some of the movement you're seeing in college football, which has sort of dominated that specific niche for so many years.
Right. What's the Arizona State Arizona trophy? They have to have some trophy, right?
Oh, what it's really it? Cool. It's a territorial cup. Didn't win it this year. And it's a really neat little kind of like chalice kind of thing.
Okay.
Two handles on it, and it's awesome. It's very pretty. It's very cool.
Yeah. So that's
but I've part seen of some it, weird man. Ones. The one the Michigan State one. It's like a board. I don't know.
The Big Ten has some weird ones.
There's some very Big Ten-ish ones.
Yeah,
there.
Like, and the then, brown jug or something. Yeah. Like, isn't that like a Minnesota somebody? I don't remember who
there's,
that is.
I like the Apple Cup. The Apple Cup gets really heated, too. I think that's a really underrated rivalry game every single year.
Yeah.
But I love that. It's so good for the sport, right? And, you know, I think that applies, too, in the NFL. It's just that some of the rivalries have been different over the years, and not necessarily like crosstown. Like Bengals Browns has always been really fun.
Right.
But other than, you know, I just think that there's such an opportunity there, specifically if you have two teams in the same general region.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm not saying, oh, work together, we're buddies or whatever, but there is an element to that. If you could build that up and have it be something really special, I do think it would elevate both teams. And by the way, Jordan, I just want to point out for anybody who might be listening, it's Tuesday. There's still plenty of time to do this. The Rams have blue jerseys. The Chargers also have blue jerseys. I think we just do it up.
No.
Like, what pay the fine? What will start a GoFundMe? However many million dollars they get fined. Let blue versus blue. Let's
you're flying
let's do
too
it.
Close to the sun, Rich. That's too much blue. I don't like it. You're flying. You got your fix with 51 points in blue. That was the cleanse. That was like the beet powder that you put in the smoothie right after the new year. Like that that gets all the toxins out. Now you can start fresh with You can start fresh with any jersey combo heading into 2023, because you've sort of saged out the locker room at that point in terms of the jersey combos. But you can't go too far before it's a clean start. Like, you can't go too far onto one side, because then you, the general universal uniform imbalance, you kind of could mess with some weird spirits and vibes, man.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. It's just, you know, we can dream, right? We can dream.
I don't think, yeah. I think that would look bad. No, I think all blue.
It'd be amazing.
I think that would be terrible.
Imagine how fun that would be to cover. Like, everybody's just out there in all blue, and, you know, just like the balls just flying around. It would be chaos. It would be
like
wonderful.
Blue and navy. And it's like, just like, if you, God, yeah. if you have problems with greens and blues, if you're in your vision, like, yeah. you're just screwed, you know?
Right. Right. It's like when the Rams, I think it was Miles Simmons who coined this back in the day, when the Rams had their all blue, or excuse me, their all yellow color rush, and they played somebody, I can't remember who was all red, and it was like ketchup versus mustard bowl. It was quite a thing to behold.
I did like those yellows. I wasn't covering great. The team at the time. I really liked those color rush yellows, by the way.
I lobbied to keep those as part of the rotation, because I thought they were really good. But who knows? Talk about big storylines during the offseason,
Jordan. 2023. We know that's a big one. They have one more combo.
Man. And potentially a new helmet color. Oh, my gosh. There's going to be so much to discuss. And maybe that's a great pivot point here, Jordan, because a couple weeks left in the season. Thank you to all of our subscribers who have stayed with us and listened to the podcast, supported Jordan's work. We really appreciate you. We usually plug our normal discount. We do have a special discount going this week. I have to say I'm a little embarrassed. I don't know when it ends, but at least through the end of this week, you can get a special dollar per month deal at The Athletic to join us. It's going to be a big time. A lot of stuff that's going on. I know Jordan, I'm looking at her right now, and I can see the ideas just swimming around in her head for all the great off-season content, all the dissection of what happened this season, and all the ways that's going to carry over into 2023. So I want to wish everybody a very happy new year. We'll be back with you, of course, after the Rams-Chargers game. And Jordan, I hope you have a safe and happy new year, and carry us into the new year on the right note.
Yeah, guys, I wanted to say a quick but very earnest thanks again to everyone who left well wishes and kind words. I am feeling a lot better. And it's pretty stark reminder to take care of yourself and to get yourself checked out if you think something is off, even if it doesn't seem that bad in the moment. As we know now, as I know now, stuff can escalate really quickly. So make sure you're taking care of yourselves. We do have a discount running while this podcast publishes. You will still be able to catch the discount. It's a dollar a month discount over on theathletic.com. My favorite thing in the world. But as Rich so loves to remind you all, if you don't catch that discount, you can still swing into the new year with any great discount or anytime after that, because if you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast, you can get my favorite thing in the world, which is, in fact, a great discount. Guys, happy new year. This has been, it has been a fun year. It's been crazy and it's been wild and it's been very bleak at times, but I do think it's been fun. And most of that is because we have such a great listener group and such a great subscriber and readership base. And I earnestly wanted to thank all of you for that as we do head into the 2023 off season and then back into the season. Please stay hydrated. Please stay caffeinated. Celebrate wisely into the new year. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Be good to each other. And we'll catch you next time.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.